Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-ALL for Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
To find out what's really going on behind the music, sometimes you have to dig deep. I'm Dr. Mike, and on the new season of Going There, we're doing just that.
Art or music can be your escape and your therapy.
Going There is the podcast at the crossroads of music and mental health, where we have raw, meaningful conversations with artists like Noah Kahan, Julian Baker, Jason Isbell, Youngblood, The Head and the Heart, and Bishop Briggs.
I recently heard someone describe grief as glitter, where you'll clean it up, and then you'll find little pieces.
By opening ourselves up to these real discussions about mental health, we can foster understanding and gain even greater appreciation for the music we all love.
For me, like, my favorite songs give me happy tears.
So join me and some of your favorite artists on the new season of Going There with Dr. Mike, brought to you by Sound Mind Live and the Consequence Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store and online. And now, the more you buy, the more you save on beds, bases, and more. Plus, get free premium delivery on any bed with base. Limited time. For J.D. Power 2025 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Check it out at a Sleep Number store today.
So you want to be a rock and roll star? No? Well, how about a podcast star? Well, as it turns out, there's a new all-in-one platform just for you. It's called Anchor, and it's the easiest way to make a podcast. And check this out, it's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer, and then Anchor will distribute the podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify and Apple Podcast and, you know, everywhere else in podcast land. And what's even better, you can actually make money from your podcast. Go figure. No minimum listenership on that. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go ahead, download the free Anchor app right now or go to anchor.fm to get started. So what are you waiting for? Podcast stardom is within your reach.
The music world moves fast. Want to stay up to date on the latest albums and get in-depth examinations with the artists? Check out Consequence of Sound, the podcast. Bite-sized album reviews for the music fan on the go who wants to stay in the know, and much more. Subscribe to the series on iTunes or your favorite podcast provider, and let the writers of Consequence of Sound steer you right. Check it out at consequenceofsound.net/COS podcast. Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's an audio interview series presented by WFPK Independent Louisville at WFPK.org, Consequence of Sound, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Wherever you're listening from, please do hit the subscribe button right now so you can keep up with the series. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest is Senjin Tate of the band Remy Zero. It was this year, 20 years ago, 1998, that they released their sophomore record, Villa Elaine, that spurred the hits Prophecy and Fair. We get to talk about what it was like during that time, everything that was happening. Fair would end up going to the Garden State soundtrack, and we do get the story, his relationship with Zach Braff. And we'll even jump in a little bit out of time to when their song Save Me became the theme song for the television show Smallville. There's also some talk of working with super producer David Bottrell. And they opened up the infamous OK Computer tour, the Radiohead tour. So we'll talk about that as well. There's also a touching, heartbreaking, but ultimately hopeful story that Sinjin's gone through lately, battling and beating cancer and at the exact same time becoming a father. It's a story with a happy ending. I do promise you that. Kyle Meredith with Remy Zero. First, I should ask, you know, what have you been up to? It sounds like life has been busy.
It has been quite busy. My, you know, our drummer had passed away on a few years back on New Year's, and he was amazing. But that kind of threw us all for a loop. And I've been just, I've been recording a lot of music, making music. I really just kind of wanted to retreat into a different world for a while and kind of, you know, rebuild. And but yeah, I have had some health issues, but I've gotten over them now, and I'm doing really good.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I really am. You know, we've been such a big fan of the music that you did with Remy Zero. You know, those three albums still stand up so well. And, you know, to hear that you're still in the game in whatever way, it's really great to hear.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much. That makes me very happy.
Yeah. And you, about that, too, because you'd done some composing. Is that what I read after Remy Zero?
Yeah, there's you know, we all kind of went off and did a lot of different projects, and a lot of people are working in different capacities, and it's just really great. I mean, we're all still friends, and it's really, really good. We're all still doing music for TV and movies and stuff, and but you know, we always, every once in a while, we'll all come back together and play around, and you know, it's really great.
You said those last shows, you know, well, your drummer passed away, and I think you'd done some shows around 2010. If you're still all talking to each other. I mean, I think I read at that time you said, and this is the closing statement on the band, but that it's been a few years later. Is that still the case? Do you guys still think that was the final statement for Remy Zero?
No, I don't. No, I see music happening. And I mean, there's just been so much. I think we really just wanted to make sure we were all coming from a similar place. There was no real acrimony or anything. We just wanted to make sure we were coming from a pure place. And it feels really amazing, you know. It feels really good, and everybody's really excited. And I just have a great time playing with those guys and just being around them anyway. So it's just a joy for me, you know.
Well, that sort of leads us into the moment where we hop in the time machine here, because I'd reached out to you. Villa Elaine, you know, turns 20 years old this year. In fact, I think the date just happened a few weeks ago, 1998. What a record that was, too. You know, and as I was saying, it still sounds so great. And I don't know if you thought about it, but, you know, we'll start with the broad strokes. Like, what comes to your mind when you think back to that record in that time?
There was a lot going on at that time. We were in a really interesting phase in our band. It's funny to think my record is not old enough to drink, but very old. It's like it's strange to think back that long, but it was amazing. You know, one of the things that sticks out a lot for me was when we first started Hermesbird, and we were kind of in Atlanta. That's the first song on the record. I just remember playing around with this beat in that intro guitar hook that Jeffrey Kane was playing, and it just kind of came together real effortlessly, and it was like a whole new beginning for us. You know, it was really fun. And so little parts of the album stick out for us, and working with David Bottrell was just amazing. He's a really great producer engineer.
I mean, David Bottrell, he had just done Tool's Enema record. Like, I think as far as his discography goes, that's the one right before yours. So
exactly, like, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's
polar opposite.
Yeah, that's a heck of a jump.
I love Tool, by the way.
Yeah, was there any kind of I don't know, like is that one of the reasons why you chose him? Is his versatility with things like that?
Yeah, I mean, we loved what he did with that, and we also loved what he had done with Peter Gabriel and the guys at Real World. And he had worked with a lot of people, and mostly we like to just meet with producers. And once we met with him, he just seemed like he fit in. The coolest, you know, way we decide if we want to work with someone is if we forget they're not a band member, you know.
Right.
We like to just feel like he's already part of the band, then we're like, okay. We'll
now, I don't know if his head was shaved back then, but I'm thinking that was a lot of shaved heads at the time in one room.
Yeah, that was a little too many at that point. Everyone was getting confused for each other.
Funny.
Which is great, you know, I could just send him out and do all all the singing. I could stay at home.
So the journey to this record then, you know, it's worth kind of backing up before the actual album, because I think that's a big part of the story here. You know, leaving, you know, Birmingham and that side of the country and living in Hollywood. Like, it seems like a lot of this record is sort of based on that story. Is that right?
It is. And it's really interesting because a lot of the songs and its whole trajectory was, you know, formulated in Birmingham, in Atlanta, in Nashville, and it just pretty much different songs and different things were being written on our way out. And then once we got to L.A., too, a lot of large chunk of it was written. My brother had written a lot, even in the South, that had like Wither Vulcan and stuff that he had, and Goodbye Little World, oh, that were amazing. And so for me, at least, it does feel like a journey record, you know, going from one side to the other of the country.
Hearing how your songwriting changed even between that first record and Villa Elaine, like these songs, yeah, seem like they were meant to be heard by bigger audiences. Like, what do you equate that to? Where did that come from? That education, the ability, what?
I don't know. We were all pretty young at that time, so I don't, a little of both, I think. I it could have been just what we were reading or ingesting or what we were doing at different times. We kind of all grew at the same rate, and we just happened to all kind of synchronize at some point, you know?
Well, the album comes out, and, you know, the critics are there. I mean, you guys were stamped with the next big thing, and to come from where you're coming from, was there weight on your shoulders? Because that's rarely something that anyone can live up to, you know, in the end.
Yeah, it was. I thought it was great. I mean, it was beautiful because we had come, just a lot of good things were happening at that period. And it was just a really good period. It seems like we were evolving, and that was at a period in our lives, and I guess everybody has those, where you can just see evolution happening before your eyes in real time. You know, it just felt everyone was having a lot of firsts in their lives, you know, and it felt really good. It was really fun, and, you know, a lot of really good things happened to it. It's interesting. You know, I got married and divorced right before the record even came out. So it was a weird one.
Yeah.
Everybody had their own little experiences, and there was a lot of that. There was a lot of these firsts for everyone in that period. You know?
Well, it's impossible not to talk about that era without talking about another band that, for better and worse, I'm sure, that you were constantly associated with at the time. You know, you read any review and the name Radiohead is there. You know, it's there, but...
Exactly.
Yeah. So we can't look at that history without talking about that too. When you look back on that now, did it ever feel like a burden? Were you guys okay with that?
Yeah, I love Radiohead, and I still love them. They're great, and they're all really great people and cool, and they're really nice. And I you know, I never felt this. Me as the singer, I guess, you know, everyone had different burdens, and, you know, I guess maybe in retrospect I'm seeing it with different glasses, but I never had any kind of sense of, I mean, that's if someone's going to compare me to a band, that's cool. I'll take that one.
Yeah, because you end up as the opener for the OK Computer tour too. I mean, you know, to have the attention on you all, the critical acclaim for this record, while also being on one of the biggest tours tied to one of the decade's most important albums. What was going on around that time? What was happening on those tours for you all?
It was just amazing. And that's what I mean, a lot of great firsts, you know, that. But prior to that album, and we had been steadily growing in L.A. and around, you know, and we toured a lot. And it had been really great to experience, you know, playing a place. And this is prior to the final, because with Villa Elaine, we had our own little studio, so we were always pretty much recording it from coast to coast, you know. And it was really cool, old 2-inch tape with a Neve board, you know. It was really interesting. And it was really amazing to tour and to see all of these great people, and then we'd come back to the same place in the same area, and it would be a bigger show. It would be a bigger, more people, and then you do it again, and you get bigger and bigger, and it was a good period. And then when Villa Elaine was recorded and came out, it just all kind of synced up at a perfect, you know, trajectory. It was just really nice.
Were Radiohead offering advice, any help for you all to kind of navigate these kind of waters?
No, they're just quit now while you can, things like that. No, I'm just kidding. No. It was fine. Yeah, I mean, they were very friendly. We weren't like all like hanging out and having sushi together. we would meet up, and we were all on. We knew each other, and we would talk and friendly. And you know, there's members of the band who still work with those guys to this date, and they're all really amazing people. But they were very kind and very, and there was a lot of advice, and there was a lot of really great interaction, inspiration. You know, a lot of people like that too, and it wasn't just. I mean, the Radiohead is talked about a lot, and that's amazing. And but there was a lot of great artists that were inspiring at the time. You know, we would hang out with just a whole variety of all these different artists, and you know, it was a really cool period because you could go and be playing and hang out with the Smashing Pumpkins, and then you'd go hang out with Counting Crows, and then you'd hang out, and these were just like amazing things, you know, amazing situations. Yeah. We'd played with Weezer for a long time, and you know, these are just all really cool. I have nothing but very positive reflections on that period.
And what an amazing era, and just to kind of be in those scenes, you know, I mean, all the bands mm-hmm. that you name is just, you know, just an incredible time for rock music.
It was great. There was like My Bloody Valentine was out, and then Nirvana. I mean, it was just so much amazing, interesting stuff. It was really cool.
Well, I do want to ask about a few of these songs because, you know, there are classics on this record. Prophecy sounds as good today as it always did. That became like a minor single. I feel like it should have been, you know, quite a bit bigger than it did.
I think they were shocked that it even did as well as it did. I think once it started coming out, they were like, oh, but this is actually doing well.
What's the story behind that song?
Well, that was one that I had, both lyrically and melodically, I was just pacing the streets in L.A. We had just gotten there. And that was one of the, you know, songs come about in so many different ways. There was this part that a guitar player was working on that he just was writing. And one night while he was at the studio, I was just totally on the other side of Hollywood, just pacing around. And I knew no one in the city. And that's another moment I remember, you know, I haven't thought about in a long time, but where I was just walking around, and lyrically the whole thing just came to me, and I just was writing that whole thing. Now, without melody or out anything, but I just wrote the lyrics really fast. And as soon as I got back to the studio, Jeff had this whole song ready to go. And so I thought, well, I might as well try to see if I can make this fit, you know. And it just came about in a magical way. And it's really interesting. You know, I haven't even thought about that in so long.
Just that word, even prophecy. There was an interview you did around that time with MTV, and I think they were asking about the name Remy Zero, and you said, you know, it's a prophet on a quest to find what's real. Of course, then you said it'll take 2 or 3 albums to kill him off. And talk about being prophetic right there.
Exactly. I was always a prophet.
How that all...
I should have prophesied a bigger bank account. No. And as long as I'm prophesied.
That's real funny. Yeah, they also kept referring to you guys as a glam rock band, and maybe that's what we were perceiving glam rock at the time in the late 90s, but I don't know.
It's, yeah.
Not exactly how I always heard you myself, and you know, it's just titles that critics put on bands all the time, and I get that, but was there ever sort of, I don't know if struggle is the right word, but sort of that, you know, that push to figure out what your image was in all of that?
No, clearly, if you've seen those photos, you can tell we were imageless. We were pathetic in that realm. Yeah, there was a lot of those kind of labels and stuff going around. Like, there's certain things that I got that was cool, but then certain things I just didn't understand at all. But, you know, none of that fazed me. I never took... I'm lucky in that I'm either... I can let things go quickly, or I'm just... which I think more likely is just I'm not that bright. You know, I'm not that deep to let something weigh on my nerves. So if someone said that they liked us or didn't like us, or that we sounded like this or that, it was not going to affect where I'm going, unless it was someone that I, you know, personally was having an interaction with. If someone wanted to write about the songs and they felt like it was this or that, I didn't feel like it was my position or job to, you know, prove them wrong or to do any. I didn't want that to interfere with what I was searching for in my life. And that's a cool thing, I think.
That's a very cool thing. If you can have that, you know, not everybody's able to kind of hold on to that.
It's true. Of course, we did implode, and so who knows.
which maybe we'll get to here in just a moment. But now before we, the other bona fide classic on that record, Fair. Beautiful song. Beautiful song. And I'll pose the same question first. Like, what do you remember about writing Fair?
I had written that, trying to think, you know, what I distinctly remember, there's aspects to a lot of these things that are kind of interpersonal that, you know, I don't know how you would explain it, but that was a very important song to me. And my favorite part of the whole song is the very last few lines at the very end. But I thought that was a really cool thing. I remember distinctly recording vocals with Bottrell, and we were at some studio, and they were doing construction in the studio, and so this ceiling tile stuff was falling down, and I was choking, so I couldn't, like, my throat was all ripped up. That was really funny. I guess that's I haven't even thought about this in so long. This is brilliant, man. Thank you. That's a song that it definitely has specific meanings, and it's about specific people in my life. But I thought it was a really, I was always nervous about songs like that, and about Life and Rain and things like that, because sometimes when I would come in with a song, and it would be, if a song made me laugh or feel embarrassed, then I got to where that was probably a good thing, you know? If I felt like, oh, this is the most silliest, craziest thing on earth. If it made me feel embarrassed, then I was like, okay, this should be on the record probably. Or I'd play it for the guys, and I'd say, look what I just wrote, and they'd say, that's great. And I'd think, really? I have a better one.
You know, that, of course, might have been forever looked over as a nice little album track, but still an album track. It would go on to its own infamy years later, being in Garden State, which is a longer life from point A to B than a lot of songs usually get.
Right. And, you know, Zach Braff is just amazing. He's such a sweet, sweet guy. I love when you meet people in Hollywood and they turn out to be every bit as good as you would think they would be, or would hope that they would be, you know? People always have horror stories about Hollywood actors or LA people, but, you know, I found that there was a lot. I didn't find that to be true. I know there's the joke of that, but there were some really great people, and he's one of them. He's always been a really and has put us in a bunch of his movies. Mm-hmm. And he's a really cool guy. He's so funny and cool. I like him.
Now, was it him that reached out to you about that song? Is that how it ended up in Garden State?
Yes, he was. He had come to a lot of our shows at the Viper Room, and when we were playing for Villa Lane, he used to come to a lot of our shows out in L.A.
Never know who's going to be in the crowd.
Right, during the Scrub era. That was really strange. I noticed you play at the Viper Room, and there was a lot of famous people around. It was really cool. Everybody was really nice, and it was a good energy. That was a good period, you know? Good, everybody was down to earth. I was really high.
That'll help.
We were all on the same plane. It could be column A, column B.
Bent Montench, Heartbreakers. Is he on this record?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah, he is, actually. I forgot about that. He's awesome. Yeah, wow. He played on Goodbye Little World, I think.
I mean, to have a heartbreaker on your record, that's not bad.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, there's just so many different songs. Yeah, he's on a couple. That was amazing. And see, that's why. It was just a good energy. A heartbreaker on a record, man. That's a guaranteed. It's your hit right there.
Well, again, it's a record that completely stands up, you know, the way I hear it. And it's been a lot of fun for me to listen to again, you know, just kind of.
That is very kind. You know, I'm going to go listen to it now. You really inspired me. I haven't heard it in ages, really. It's true. I've never listened to my own music back, but I think I'm going to listen to it now.
Yeah, I'm glad. Of course, you know, while we're here, you know, I want to bring up the other big one for you guys, because I know it doesn't fit into our timeline, but since we're on the phone right now, you know, you take a song like Save Me, it goes on to be in Smallville, and, you know, has this influence, you know, on its own. It feels like, does it feel like that's sort of something that lives in a different atmosphere when it happens like that, you know, that becomes a theme song for a big show? Does that feel?
It does have a different quality to it. Not a bad quality. That's not, I liked it. I thought it was really interesting. I thought anyway that music could be disseminated and good, you know, out there is great. I know there was a lot of issues going around that period of time where people would think, you know, is it cool to do this and cool to do that? But, and especially, you know, especially because of that, there was a lot of people who were the anti-commercialization of that thing. And I could care less about that. I thought that was magic. And so I thought it was really cool. Yeah. It was a really good thing to have, you know.
I mean, the association.
But yeah, it definitely gives it a different color, you know.
Right.
It definitely resides in its own little universe.
I mean, the association people have, you know, with movies and songs and the way they put together,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's all my favorite stuff.
Visual and yeah, exactly. That's beautiful.
You all were in the show too, weren't you? Did you make an appearance in the show?
Yes. Yeah, we were. That was our acting debut. Thank you very much. It was the scene where Marlon Brando was. Oh, wait, that's a different movie.
Yeah.
We were the house band. No, we were the house band at the end of season one, and it was really cool, and people were nice. It was fun.
Yeah.
And Smallville has recently returned to the news, so which is interesting, or at least some of the actors and actresses have.
This is the bad one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd forgotten about that as we're talking about it, so it's all coming back. This is the ring and everything. That's yeah. No, I kind of missed that. So, well, there's an association.
Yeah, that's crazy, man.
Yeah,
like I didn't know that. That was weird, and then it all just kind of came out in the news. Now people are in jail over it and stuff.
Yeah.
No, but it was surreal because I look back on that time. You know, these things are brief because we actually were there one day, filmed what we had to film, and flew out that night and played on David Letterman later. You know, I mean, so you were there. And we hung out with the guys, and they were all very nice. And we met everyone. They were all so kind. They're really good people.
Yeah.
And we flew from Canada to New York and played on David Letterman later on. It was cool.
Yeah, nonstop when you're, you know, at that kind of height, right? You know, it's nice though because you know, as I hear you talking, it sounds like you've had a career surrounded by good people for the most part. You know, is what I can guess and everything.
Yeah, and that's what's really made it lovely. At least is that it was like growing up with a unique group of people, and those people brought in their friends, and they were good people. You know, and if you start with a good center, things just kind of blossom out. And we all had a really good time, you know. We all got to be together. And, you know, I was with my brother. I was with my best friends. It was just really good. And then, you know, the people who came into our atmosphere were part and parcel of it. It just felt great.
Well, it made for some really, really fine music. And I appreciate you talking to me about all that.
Oh, thank you very much.
Yeah. So what happens next for you? I mean, is there anything specific in the works that we can look forward to?
Yes, there is a lot coming up. I recently had come to a face-to-face to the river moment with my own mortality. And now that that's been resolved, I kind of have a whole new batch of songs that I'm doing. And I feel really inspired. I definitely foresee Remy Zero coming down the pipeline and more of projects too with other people. Very excited.
Man, that is really exciting. I do want to ask specifically, and you don't have to, but what we're talking about is cancer, yeah. Right?
Yeah, cancer, brutal cancer, and then lots of chemo and radiation, and then surgeries and more surgeries, and then it's been chaos. And then, you know, combined with my other issues, you know, altogether, I had to do a lot of kind of cleansing and soul searching. It came real close.
Yeah.
And it was big time cancer. It was just brutal. You know, I still got, and the chemo and the radiation alone just ate me up inside. And at the same time, I found out I was having a baby. And, you know, it was the day I found out I had cancer. It was the day my wife came up and said, well, since you've gotten that news, I should tell you, you're having a child.
Wow.
And I was like, what is going on? And then, but it's beautiful because, you know, I have this amazing, beautiful, perfect little monkey man. I love him more than the sun and the moon. His name is Atticus Arrow Lucian Tate, and he's like just the greatest smile in the world. And my wife is perfect, and I have this really great new synergy. And, you know, going through all this again has actually gotten me back reconnected with the guys in the band and with my center and my mind again, because, you know, it takes you to these weird places. But it's cool because I feel as confused and excited as I did when I was younger, like when I was in the Villa Elaine era, because everything seems like it's the first time I'm doing it, because everything seems just, everything I'm doing is different because it's done with a different mindset. And I'm equally as nervous and excited for everything. So I think there's going to be a lot of beautiful things coming up.
Well, I'm so happy to hear that you made it to the other side of all this. And
I'm shocked. I didn't know how it was going to happen. It was definitely kind of like, well, check, you know, he's leaving soon. But it turned out really good. So
yeah, no. I'm happy. I'm grateful for you too, and to hear that, you know, it's putting music on the table again. That's great news. Congratulations. I mean, congratulations whatever that means on you know, making it through on the health and the baby and everything that you got going for
Thank
you right
you.
Now.
Oh, it's magic. It totally, you know, helped me detox, you know, because I was a troubled, you know, drinker slash whatever, and. It's just helped me clear. I got my head clear again and everything. And you know, it's just great. I'm really happy about everything. And, you know, speaking about the album, it's funny because a lot of the lyrics for a lot of those songs and have kind of been in my head a lot recently, even during that period, because I would hear songs that, or lyrics that my brother had written or I had written, or just songs that would kind of did prophesy certain things that were going to happen in my life. And I always felt like I was destined to go through certain trials, you know, but in a good way, but in a real positive way, you know, so I'm excited.
The prophet strikes again, Remy Zero.
Yeah. There you go. Bless my Buddhist soul.
Thank you so much.
Oh, it's been very kind. Thank you so much.
It's been awesome. Let us know, you know, when we can talk again, when the music's around. I can't wait to hear what's in store.
I will. Thank you so much. It's been really cool talking to you. I am going to go back and listen to the record. Uh-huh. So if I call you back later on tonight and say, like, that song was... but definitely, let's keep in touch, and you have a great day.
You too, man. Take care.
See you, brother.
Bye. Hey, thanks to Senjin Tate for giving me the call there. Remy Zero, Villa Elaine celebrating its 20th anniversary. I do recommend that you go listen to the album as well right now. But not before you hit the subscribe button. Whether you're listening on YouTube or you're checking out the podcast on iTunes or Podchaser or wherever you're listening from, hit that subscribe button, give the series a rating, and then leave a review as well. After that, you can head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show every Monday through Thursday from noon to 3 Eastern, and where you'll find bonus episodes of this series. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.